Okay, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. And a really special welcome today to all you truth seekers tuning in, especially those from the Great Awakening Report community.
That's right. Today, we're jumping into a really fascinating set of source materials.
We are. We're looking specifically at a Q&A session, answering questions directly from subscribers over at the Great Awakening Report.
Yeah, exactly. So our goal here, our mission for this deep dive, is really to explore those questions and the answers that this specific source material provides.
We want to see what insights they offer, you know, for navigating these pretty complex times, and maybe what they suggest about expanding consciousness.
Mm-hmm. And the source itself frames this Q&A as coming from, well, what they call an awakened community, people focused on critical thinking, discernment, and looking for truth outside of the usual mainstream channels.
The questions definitely reflect that perspective. They're direct.
Very direct. So we're just going to take you right through the information provided in the source. It should be pretty energetic.
All right, let's dive right in then. The first question from a subscriber really cuts to the chase on recent events. Question one, are the LA riots a grassroots protest, or are they part of a larger agenda?
Okay, so this source material goes right at this. It contrasts the view you often hear, maybe in some media reports, that these are, you know, a natural, spontaneous kind of outburst.
I saw emotion spilling over.
Exactly. But this source's analysis, it presents a very different take. It argues that when you look at the coordination, the apparent financial backing, how quickly things escalated.
Right, across the country sometimes.
Precisely. It becomes difficult, in their view, to just accept it as purely grassroots.
So what kind of connections does the source material point to then?
Well, this is where it gets specific.
Mm-hmm.
The source highlights investigations suggesting potential involvement from foreign entities and NGOs, non-governmental organizations.
Okay.
It specifically mentions alleged links to networks reportedly funded by George Soros, someone named Neville Singham, and also alleged sympathizers of the Chinese Communist Party.
Wow. Okay. That's quite a claim. So according to this source, these alleged connections suggest something more deliberate.
Yes. The material calls it a scripted form of unrest. They even use the phrase engineered chaos, arguing it serves multiple agendas.
Engineered chaos. So the source then asks the follow-up, right? Who actually benefits from all this destruction?
Exactly. And this is where they connect the dots, in their view, to what they call emerging smart city agendas.
Smart cities. How does that link up?
Well, the source argues that this kind of urban chaos can be used as a sort of pretext, a justification for more centralized control and technocratic restructuring.
Technocratic restructuring.
Wow.
What does the source mean by that, practically speaking?
They link it to implementing things like widespread surveillance systems, pushing for digital ID infrastructure, maybe even setting up AI-managed zones in cities.
So the chaos provides the why for rolling out these technologies.
That's the argument presented in the source, yeah. That it creates the public justification, or at least acceptance, for stricter controls.
Okay. The source also mentions some other potential influences.
It does. It speculates about Mexican cartel influence, and even alleges some level of collusion between foreign governments and what they term deep state operatives.
And how does that fit in?
Their view is that things like immigration policy could be sort of weaponized in this context to undermine national sovereignty.
Hmm. So a lot of moving parts alleged there. How does the source wrap up its answer on this question?
It makes a pretty strong claim. It concludes by stating that when chaos seems this organized, this coordinated, well, according to their analysis, it stops looking like a protest and starts looking like a playbook.
A playbook. That definitely implies intent and planning. Okay, let's shift gears. The next subscriber question moves towards maybe strategic displays of power. Question two, what's the deeper purpose behind Trump's military parade and that DC spectacle?
So the source starts by acknowledging the, you know, the official reason given, commemorating the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army. Honoring history, patriotism, soldier sacrifices.
The surface level purpose.
Right. But then the source material immediately says context matters. Yeah. And it points to the backdrop of things happening at the time, like global tensions, say with Iran, the domestic unrest they just discussed, which they allege is foreign fueled.
And maybe a sense of fracturing national identity.
Exactly. So within that context, the source argues the parade takes on, well, a deeper meaning.
What kind of deeper meaning?
They interpret it as a strategic demonstration of force, but interestingly, not just aimed outwards at foreign adversaries.
Okay, so aimed inwards too.
That's the suggestion. The source argues it was partly about demonstrating loyalty between the civilian population and the military, and also signaling Trump's alignment with what the source calls constitutional defenders within the armed forces.
So a signal about internal alignment, maybe solidarity with a certain faction. Does the source suggest anything else?
It does add another layer of speculation. The source posits that the parade might have also served as a kind of logistical cover.
Logistical cover? For what?
Well, they speculate it could have been an opportunity, you know, disguised by this big public ceremony, to quietly reposition certain military assets within the DC area.
And why would that be needed, according to this speculation?
The source suggests maybe in preparation for potential conflict, perhaps the Iran situation mentioned earlier, or possibly to just bolster domestic readiness during that period of perceived internal instability.
So the source sees multiple potential layers there.
Yes, they frame the whole event as a significant signal within what they call multidimensional warfare.
Multidimensional warfare. What does that encompass in their view?
As the source uses it, it covers the geopolitical moves, psychological operations influencing how people think and feel, and informational warfare, which is about shaping the narratives.
So a single event can be a move on multiple chessboards at once in this view.
Precisely. The source concludes that this event served as a powerful reminder signaling who still stands for law, order, and legacy. And at the same time, it acted as a kind of subtle warning to those the source believes are orchestrating chaos.
A warning that?
That the guardians of the Republic remain watchful. It's presented as a message delivered through spectacle.
Okay. Let's shift again, this time to global governance. Question 3 from the subscribers. What does the WHO's new pandemic treaty actually mean for individual freedom?
Right. So the source acknowledges upfront that this treaty is presented as being about global health security, preparing for future pandemics. Standard stuff on the surface.
Right.
But the source asserts pretty quickly that in their reading, the implications go much, much deeper than just that.
How so? What's the concern?
They focus heavily on something called the One Health Agenda, which they say is embedded in the treaty's language.
One Health. What does the source say that means?
According to this source, One Health isn't just about human health. It broadens the scope to potentially include environmental policies, animal policies, and this, they argue, could open the door for a supranational authority, something above national governments, to have jurisdiction across all these areas.
So way beyond just pandemic response guidelines.
That's the interpretation in this source material, yes. They see it as setting up a structural pathway, a way to potentially override national laws, maybe dissolve borders when it comes to health or environmental matters, and implement global compliance rules.
And how would that be justified?
The source suggests it would likely be framed as necessary for public safety during any declared crisis, whether it's health, climate, or something else.
Does the source connect this treaty to anything else?
It does. It explicitly links the potential powers in the treaty to simulated scenarios, like bioterror attack simulations. They mention things like the National Blueprint for Biodefense as examples.
And what's the conclusion they draw from that connection?
They argue that when you look at the treaty alongside these kinds of preparedness documents, it paints what they call a chilling vision of top-down technocratic control.
There's that phrase again, technocratic control. We heard it with smart cities, now on a global scale.
Seems to be a connecting theme in the source's analysis. But the absolute core concern they highlight regarding this treaty is sovereignty.
Sovereignty? Meaning?
What kinds? National sovereignty. A country's right to govern itself. And perhaps even more fundamentally for the individual, personal sovereignty, your right to make your own decisions about your life, your body, your choices. The source argues both are directly threatened by this treaty framework.
So what specific outcomes does the source worry could happen if this treaty is adopted and, say, emergency powers are invoked?
They list several possibilities they think could become normalized under such conditions. Things like forced lockdowns, mandated digital health IDs.
Digital IDs again.
Yes. Also, potential restrictions on your behavior linked to climate policies, and even the idea of geofenced living zones.
Geofenced zones? You mean like digitally restricted areas where your movement is controlled?
That's the implication the source draws from their analysis, yes. But their biggest emphasis, really, is the impact on individual freedom. on agency.
Agency over your own body, your movement, your choices.
Exactly. And the source has a very strong warning about giving in to fear around these possibilities.
What's the warning?
They state quite clearly that if people surrender their agency, their freedom, simply out of fear, they risk losing not just those external liberties, but also something internal, what the source calls the sacred inner compass that defines what it means to be human.
Wow. Connecting global treaties directly to our inner sense of self and, well, consciousness.
It's a central theme, yes. Freedom is linked to conscious choice, not just external circumstances in this view.
Okay, let's move to the economy now. Question 4. Is the global economy on the verge of collapse, or is that just fear-mongering?
The source tackles this by stating pretty bluntly that the official story, the narrative of economic recovery, is buckling. It's collapsing under the weight of the actual data, they argue.
What data does the source point to specifically?
They list several things they see as major red flags. Record levels of consumer debt, for one. Ongoing mass layoffs across different sectors, housing becoming completely unaffordable for many, rising business bankruptcies, and growing food insecurity.
So things people are likely feeling in their daily lives.
Exactly. Things becoming harder to ignore. And the source's main argument isn't just that things are bad, but that it might not be accidental.
Not just a natural downturn.
No. The source material claims that some insiders are actually warning of an engineered collapse. They even use the term controlled demolition of the current financial system.
A controlled demolition? For what purpose, according to this source?
The source claims the purpose is specific to clear the way for introducing central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, and possibly universal basic income, UBI.
And the goal of that would be?
To establish, in their view, a completely new financial system, one based on total traceability of every transaction and linking your access to money, potentially, to behavioral compliance.
Traceability, compliance. That definitely echoes the concerns about surveillance and control we heard regarding smart cities and the WHO treaty.
It all seems to connect in the source's analysis, yes. Now, about the fear-mongering part of the question.
Right. Is this just meant to scare people?
The source offers a nuanced answer here. They say that noticing these economic patterns, seeing the signs of distress and potential engineering that's not fear-mongering, they call it pattern recognition.
Okay, so identifying the potential problem isn't the issue.
Right. However, they then state very strongly that the narrative of fear itself absolutely is being weaponized.
Weaponized. How so and by whom, according to the source?
The source claims fear is, and I quote, the deep state's favorite currency.
Fear is a currency. Why would fear be useful in that way, according to this analysis?
Well, the source explains that when people are afraid, they're easier to manage. Fear keeps populations distracted, divided, feeling powerless. It makes critical thinking harder and encourages people to depend on authorities or institutional rescuers.
Mm.
Their core assertion is, fear-induced compliance is how mass transitions are engineered. It's presented as a tool for managing collective consciousness and guiding society in a desired direction.
Managing consciousness through fear. But the source doesn't just leave it there, right? They offer a way to respond.
Yes, definitely. They offer an empowering angle. The source suggests that simply becoming aware of this potential manipulation can break the spell. If you understand, from their perspective, that crises might be used as control mechanisms.
Then you don't have to react with panic.
Exactly. You can, as they put it, step back, see the chessboard, and consciously choose not to play the game of fear. Instead, the source advises preparing with calm clarity and strategic sovereignty.
Strategic sovereignty. There's that sovereignty point again, tied to clarity and calmness, not fear.
Precisely. It's about reclaiming that internal agency, that conscious choice, even when external circumstances look chaotic. Understanding the pattern empowers the response.
Which leads us perfectly into the final question from this subscriber Q&A. Question 5 really brings it all together. Are we approaching a spiritual awakening or a technocratic takeover?
Yeah, this is the big one. And the source material starts its answer with a really potent framing. It says, we are standing at the crossroads of two timelines.
Two timelines, two potential futures unfolding simultaneously.
That's the idea presented. The source describes the first timeline as this accelerating push towards technocracy.
Which include?
All the things we've touched on. Smart cities, pervasive AI surveillance, predictive policing, mandatory digital IDs, massive data mining to understand and influence behavior.
So basically, an intensification of those control structures. What's the end point of that timeline in the source's view?
The source paints a picture of humanity potentially becoming like a programmable node in a centralized matrix, a future they see as stripped of mystery, intuition, soul, essentially dehumanizing.
Okay, that's one possible path. What's the other timeline the source describes?
This is described as a parallel reality, a rising wave of spiritual awakening.
Spiritual awakening happening at the same time.
Yes. The source's analysis is that as the old systems and institutions seem to wobble or reveal maybe hidden agendas, more and more people are turning inward. They're seeking truth and connection outside of those conventional structures.
Turning inward towards what specifically?
The source connects this awakening to people rediscovering practices like meditation, exploring energy healing, using conscious breath work, generally seeking experiences of consciousness expansion, and a deeper connection to what they often refer to as source or source energy.
Does the source connect this to any scientific ideas?
It does make a point of referencing researchers, like a Dr. Bob Davis, who they say are working to bridge neuroscience and metaphysics. It brings up the idea, explored in some of these fields, that consciousness might not just be a byproduct of the brain.
Well, something more fundamental.
Potentially, yes. The idea that consciousness itself could be the foundational substrate of reality.
Consciousness is the ground of being. That's a huge concept.
Yeah.
It suggests our inner state is absolutely central. So we have these two timelines presented by the source technocracy or awakening. Which path does the source say wins out?
Well, this is where, according to the source material, the critical factor comes in. They state very clearly, free will is the deciding factor.
Free will. So the awakening isn't guaranteed. It's not just going to happen automatically.
Not according to this source, no. They emphasize it's not some passive event that will just wash over humanity. It has to be consciously chosen, actively engaged with by individuals. It's presented as a conscious process.
Requires active participation, then.
Exactly. The source says every single person is currently facing this fundamental choice. Do you sort of surrender to these external systems of control and manipulation? Or do you actively claim what the source calls your divine right to self-realization?
Self-realization.
Yeah.
Connecting back to that inner compass, sovereignty, conscious choice again.
Yes. It's all deeply interwoven in their framework. The source concludes this answer by saying that in this specific lifetime, we are all being initiated into a higher frequency of living.
Initiated. Like a rite of passage, almost.
Kind of. And according to the source, the final outcome of this whole pivotal period won't just be determined by external events happening to us. It's fundamentally about what we choose to become in response to everything that's happening.
So our conscious choices shape the future.
That's the core argument. Uh-huh. Our individual and collective conscious choices are what shape not just our personal reality, but the collective timeline that unfolds.
Wow. Okay. That pulls everything together in a really powerful, consciousness-focused way. So, looking back at all five questions and the answers provided in this source material,
yeah,
what's the overall big picture they present?
Well, this source suggests that when you connect all these dots, the unrest, the power plays, the global treaties, the economic shifts, the tech push versus the spiritual pull, it reveals what they see as a coordinated transition.
A transition from the old system to something new.
Yes, but crucially, they argue this transition isn't just happening organically. They claim it's being actively steered, manipulated even, by hidden powers.
But there's a counter movement.
Yes, they emphasize that this very pressure, this manipulation, is paradoxically acting as a catalyst. It's sparking what they call a mass awakening as more people start questioning the narratives they're given.
So on one hand, the source describes these patterns. Engineered unrest, alleged foreign interference, the drive for global surveillance and control.
Mm.
Basically, the world being reshaped, maybe through trauma and deception.
That's definitely one side of the picture they paint, but they immediately contrast that with the rise of, well, new voices. They mention pioneering scientists, whistleblowers, spiritual leaders, citizen journalists.
People challenging the status quo.
Exactly. Individuals who, in the source's view, are working to break the illusion, cut through the noise, and actively encourage this shift towards higher consciousness.
It really does sound like the crossroads they described.
They hammer that point home. That we are truly at a pivotal moment and the future isn't set in stone, it's still being written. And the awakening they talk about isn't just about pointing out lies.
It's more than just exposing things.
Much more, in their view. It's about individuals becoming active, conscious participants, and actually building a different reality. One based on the principles they value, like sovereignty, truth, and genuine collective well-being.
Becoming active, conscious participants. Okay, so given all that, What kind of concrete actions does the source suggest for people listening? What can you do?
The source material touches on a few things, focusing on conscious action. But a really core idea that comes through strongly is that the most important revolution, maybe the real revolution, is actually happening inside each of us.
An internal revolution.
Yes. It's about consciously choosing to connect with your own intuition, rediscovering your inner knowing, your truth, essentially remembering who you really are beneath the conditioning, and doing that through conscious practice.
Remembering who we are through practice, like meditation or awareness.
Things like that, yes. Yeah. The source suggests this inner work, this focus on personal awakening and maintaining a conscious state is foundational. By doing that, individuals don't just strengthen themselves, they also kind of ripple outwards. They inspire others to tune back into their own inner guidance.
So amidst all the external stuff, the chaos, the agendas described in the source, the most powerful response they advocate is fundamentally internal.
That seems to be the key takeaway. A conscious choice to reclaim your own awareness, your personal sovereignty, your connection to a higher state of being right from within.
That's definitely a profound perspective to sit with. Well, we've certainly taken a deep dive into the material from that Great Awakening Report Q&A today.
We have. It absolutely offers a very specific consciousness-focused lens for looking at world events and the choices we face, really emphasizing individual awareness and choice as critical factors.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us for this exploration today. As always, keep seeking truth, stay conscious, and keep diving deep.
Until next time.